Welcome to Books and Beyond with Bound. I'm Tara Khandelwal.
And I'm Michelle DeCosta.
In this podcast, we talk to India's finest authors
and uncover the stories behind the best written book
and dissect how these books shape our lives and worldviews today.
So let's dive in. Hi, everyone. Welcome back. As you all know, I'm a huge enthusiast of mysteries and puzzle solving. And, you know, so is Aishwarya. You know, so much so that, you know, we've actually taken a shot at being detectives ourselves. You know, we actually visited escape rooms here in Bombay and we had so much fun. Of course, we didn't end up solving the case in time, but it was a lot of fun. And that is why she decided to join me today to speak with the one and only Tarun Sent, who has actually compiled India's very first detective fiction anthology. And, you know, so most of us are familiar with Western detective stories like Agatha Christie, Sherlock Holmes, you know, you name it. But I think it's about time that India has its own version of these stories. So don't you think, Aishwarya?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why I'm so excited to be here, especially for this particular episode as a guest host. And, you know, the best thing about this anthology is that it covers so much of Indian detective fiction, right from, you know, the 19th century. We have a story from the 1600s and it goes up to, you know, contemporary times. So we get to have and visit some of our childhood favorites. So there is Feluda and Byomkesh Bakshi. And we get some stories by, you know, more contemporary favorites. Like we have Vikram Chandra, who is the author of Sacred Games.
Yeah, and actually there are two volumes with over 30 stories, you know, and not just, you know, from people writing in English, not just Anglophone writers, but also translations. And one of the, you know, authors is Arunava Sinha, whom we've also interviewed on this podcast. So you actually go on this roller coaster ride, you know, through these two books with murder mysteries, supernatural mysteries, sci-fi, fantasy, mystery set in colonial India. There's a lot that we have to unpack. So what are we waiting for? Let's hear from Tarun himself. Welcome, sir.
Oh, sir. Thanks. Such a pleasure to be part of your podcast. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, no, we're very excited to have you here. And I'll start with our very first question. So, you know, obviously we've grown up with all of these Western detective stories. You know, we have Sherlock Holmes, we have Agatha Christie's Hercule Poirot, and even Inspector Jacques Clouseau, better known as Pink Panther. So I am really curious, which detective stories did you grow up with as a child? And did you have a favorite detective?
Okay. Yeah, good, interesting question. Yeah, I actually enjoyed reading some of the same authors you mentioned. I guess we all really cut our teeth on Conan Doyle to begin with. Yes. Though prior to that, I guess there was also the phase of reading children's detective fiction. So Enid Blyton and her the famous Five series and this sort of, you know, excitement of also reading later the Hardy Boys and Nancy Drew's series. That was there in childhood days. And when one began to take the form a little more seriously as one grew older, then inevitably it was, Conan Doyle's Sherlock Holmes and Agatha Christie. And of course, gradually one also began to, as one grew older, come to terms with the Americans, the hard-boiled tradition of writing, which included Raymond Chandler and Dashiell Hammett and others. And I must admit that even for me, reading Indian detective fiction actually came at a slightly later stage. So at that time, one was just not really acquainted with enough of the authors. And I think even the titles, though, as you say, there were a few available in translation, like Ray's Feluda series was translated expertly by Gopa Mazumdar. But that tradition of writing was not always very well distributed. And so it may not have come one's way, even in terms of access in libraries and so on. So very much the Western tradition was predominant.
Yeah, and actually, you know, what I find really interesting, sir, is that, you know, this book or this sort of volumes is sort of a departure from your usual, work, because I know that you're sort of a very common name. You're quite popular in the speculative fiction world, you know, especially science fiction. And you've actually compiled the Golan's, South Asian anthology earlier with Hachette, which has got really good reviews. You've even taught science fiction, you know, in college, universities, all of that. And I myself, you know, I've been drawn to this genre since childhood, actually. You know, when I used to watch X-Files, you know, on TV, and then, you know, where they cover like different kinds of mysteries, you know, aliens and all of that. So I wanted to know, you know, where did your interest or your curiosity for speculative fiction arise? Could you please tell us a bit about it?
Yeah, sure. So again, in childhood, one was able to read a few of the, you know, major authors like Robert Heinlein. Again, we're speaking of the mainly in this case American tradition, and later Isaac Asimov. Some of the well-known figures of what was called the golden age of science fiction. When I was in school, I had a very good librarian who was very eclectic in his selection of titles to be placed on the shelves. So yes, the classics would be there. So our English teachers would usually ask us to read the greats of English literature. So we would read, obviously, like Thomas Hardy and Shakespeare, and of course, the greats prescribed in the syllabus. But besides that, I think the librarian understood that popular fiction has its place. And so he would keep the shelves well stocked, not necessarily with what I would call low pulp writing, that is to say, out and out commercialized sort of forms or variants of the genre, but well-written, say, science fiction, well-written detective fiction. So one could browse and develop one's taste as a result. So for me, that phase in school was absolutely crucial. Later, I actually began teaching a paper in college when I was teaching at Hindu College, titled The Forms of Popular Fiction. So there, these two genres were definitely included. But again, Western instances at the time, Asimov, we had Foundation, Agatha Christie, The Murder of Roger Ackroyd. Now, both these texts have their place and no denying their importance, but it always seemed to me a big gap that we aren't sufficiently focused on the examples of the genre from our own traditions and the particular ways in which, say, these two forms, detective fiction and science fiction, evolved in our context. So that's when one actually began to explore further. I had the chance to hear some eminent practitioners, say, for example, of science fiction. Jayant Narlikar spoke at the Sahitya Academy, I remember when I was teaching in those days, this form. And he really gave impetus to the idea that, yes, there's a homegrown tradition which is very strong and has a strong, even regional basis. In his case, the Marathi tradition. But of course, prior to that, there was the Bangla tradition, which then one began to discover a little later through translations.
I just wanted to add here, sir, because you spoke about the library. So in my library, I think the one detective that was really, really popular back then was Nancy Drew. And yeah. I remember, yeah, and as I said, you know, I used to watch X-Files, then read Nancy Drew. And in my head, I was thinking if I had to, let's say, be a female detective, I would have to look like that, sound like that, you know. It was only later that I realized, oh, like, you know, we have our own detective. Yeah.
No, I was also going to say that, you know, it's so great that you mentioned libraries, because I think school libraries especially are sort of that one thing that, you know, lead all of us to get so much more into reading. And, you know, so many people who we talk to, whether they're writers or whether they're professionally working around books and publishing, have that, you know, route back to, okay, in my childhood, there was this English teacher who inspired me, or there was this school library that was well stocked, which kind of led to, you know, that love for reading. And also your journey that you mentioned with speculative fiction is kind of similar to, I think for me, what I saw with the horror genre, because again, not something that I read too much of in my childhood, but when I went to college and when I did my master's, I got super into it. Obviously, mostly American, you know, horror fiction, and Canadian horror fiction, but getting really into that genre and then kind of starting to enjoy it. But, you know, what you mentioned about this sort of differences or similarities between speculative fiction and detective fiction. So this time when you were working with and engaging with detective fiction to such a degree, how was that different for you as a reader and also as a curator of this anthology?
Okay, I must give a shout out to my librarian. I'll name him. It was Mr. Naqvi. Mr. Naqvi was the inspiring sort of presence in the library way back in the days when I studied at Mayo College, Ajmer. But now, coming to your question. The idea was, I think, that speculative fiction, of course, is an umbrella term which encompasses many allied genres, including science fiction, even fantasy, and yes, horror too. So it's a term which is like a portmanteau sort of category, which allows for the sort of bringing in of these various allied forms under one kind of broad rubric. Well, especially I think this was useful for critics of the genres, which at a certain point began to discover that these genres were quite, the categories especially were quite porous. So they could actually see them seeping into each other. So in other words, you couldn't have a kind of absolute distinction between science fiction and fantasy, and for that matter, horror, because you could see many overlaps and be mutual reinforcements taking place, forms of hybridization taking place. Again, that's not to say that the distinctions aren't important. Obviously, in fantasy, you can have far more leeway with respect to what is possible. And in the case of especially classic science fiction, the older generation of editors placed a lot of emphasis on the importance of realistically depicted science and some degree of research into what is possible, even if improbable. In other words, that which is completely impossible must be ruled out, while in fantasy that actually was certainly something which could be brought in. Now, in the second Golanx volume, which I edited, one tried to be a bit more flexible with respect to, again, categorization and distinction. So we had authors who were actually bridging the gulf, as it were, between fantasy and science fiction included there, although it was a volume of science fiction per se. So I can give one example, Saad Hussain from Bangladesh. So he writes stories set in a near future Dhaka or near future Kathmandu, where jinns appear on the scene. And as you know, jinns are creatures from Middle Eastern folklore and mythology. But those jinns wake up and make their presence felt. And it's a future in which climate change has direly affected the environment, and in which there's a high degree of emphasis on technical fixes. So nanobots attempt to clean the air, and all sorts of problems are being faced by this over-reliance on technology. And some of the key critical questions as regards this are actually posed by these figures from the pre-modern era, the jinns. So it's a fascinating kind of style, which is very unique to his own kind of writing, which Saad Hussain has developed. And there are several other examples. I won't take too much time giving you illustrations, really. But yeah, that's an example of how speculative fiction grows into a form which is quite able to tackle some of the contemporary challenges of our time. Now, turning to the second part of the question, how did I deal with the question of distinctions while assembling this volume? So initially, the premise was that we would track the evolution of the whodunit form in its classic manifestation. This, of course, yes, we can trace back to, in the English context, to the writing of Conan Doyle and later the Golden Age writers who developed the clue puzzle structure, which is very well structured. There's a puzzle to be solved, as you recall, with clues, and there's a detective who unravels the puzzle, and at the end there's a satisfactory resolution of the puzzle. So that was the Golden Age phase, which had a great impact on our writing, and including any of the writers included in even in the collection, which I have put together. But subsequently, there has been a kind of great deal of experimentation with the form. And I think especially that is relevant in the context of a post-colonial society like that. We wouldn't just want to emulate, say, the country house settings of Golden Age fiction, because here the relation between the city and the countryside is so different. And as a result, the writers who may have begun with that premise of translation and adoption of some of the elements of the earlier, as it were, sort of very structured narratives of the Golden Age, they also began adapting it to Indian context. So there is a kind of transformation which then takes place. And we can see that as early as 1898, the first translations occurred in the 1890s with people like Sharat Chandra Sarkar actually adapting stories by Conan Doyle, including The Adventure of the Beryl Coronet, which we have included in a translation which is brought back from Bengali into English. And soon after that, these Goenda stories, Goenda is the Bengali term for detective. So soon after that, these Goenda stories were parodied by Tagore, no less than Rabindranath Tagore, in a story he wrote in 1898 titled Detective, where he takes the Mickey out of the form somewhat and also tries to satirize the British, you know, overlords by suggesting that a form like this form, the detective genre, could only flourish in Britain because they have the most convincing villains. Our villains are so boring. The dark undercurrents of British society actually give rise to these monsters who can be effectively portrayed as the antagonists in detective fiction. Here, everything is so mundane. It's so boring, basically. So he has a nice laugh at the form and at British colonialism, both in one go. So that was a remarkable moment for me to discover that even as early as that, there was experimentation taking place. To move a few decades later into the contemporary moment, well, almost a century later, say we can now find that the form is being hybridized with reference to, for example, science fiction, as in this, again, another story which we've included here by Saad Hussain, where, again, you have a kind of climate-ravaged city of Dhaka, where, again, we have some supernatural and occult elements. So there's a fantasy dimension there. But there's also a serious attention paid to detection and the sort of solving of a puzzle. A murder occurs and there's a sort of need to ascertain the identity of the perpetrator. So he's one of those figures who has really done justice to this hybridization process. There are a few others I could mention, but that's just to illustrate the specific point which you raised as regards the intermingling, if you like, of genres along the way, which can give rise sometimes to new, even genreic possibilities and kind of innovation, which allows the genre itself to be reinvented.
Yes, I think just listening to you explaining your process is a lot of fun to hear it. I can only imagine how much fun it was to sort of collaborate, you know, get all these authors together, right? Irrespective of the genre. I mean it's really cool to sort of even think about what categories fall under this because it's never been done before, right? So you've done something which sort of, let's say now, you know, there are other, editors, you know, in the future, they want to sort of come up with another collection. Now they have a very clear benchmark to follow in the Indian context, right? Because it didn't exist. But I just wanted to add that because you mentioned Saad Hussain a couple of times, and he's one of my favorite writers. Aishwarya, I highly recommend him to you if you haven't read him. So his his book about jinns itself. So I read his novel. It is brilliant because it sort of imagines like jinns who are not really worldly creatures, but sort of with humans, you know, in a respect where you sort of like, you know, interact with them. He's made it sound really realistic. So he's one of my favorite, you know, fantasy writers. But apart from that, sir, I think, you know, because you've covered so much in these books, right? And also you have like over 30 stories, which you did mention some to us. I wanted to mention my favorite out of all. So I, from the second volume, this is on the second volume, it's by Meeti Shroff, where there's a Catholic nurse, okay? And she actually tends to an old man in the story. So it's actually narrated by this nurse. And she's really, you know, worried about him. She's really sort of tense throughout the story where she says, okay, I know someone's out to kill him, but I don't know who it is, right? Because it's an old person and there is it's sort of a joint family setup. And so everyone becomes a suspect in the story, right? It's the son, it's the daughter-in-law, it's the grandson, it's everybody around it. So we as readers are also wondering, oh, poor thing, he's so old, hope nothing happens to him. And, you know, this nurse clearly looks like she's looking out for him, right? At least until the end of the story. And then what happens is you sort of, it's this very subtle way of telling you that, hey, who, you know, you might be thinking Mary is all this time, she might not be that person, right? And it actually reminded me of this classic story, Lamb to the Slaughter, by Roald Dahl, where there's also a Mary in the same story, and where, you know, throughout half of the story, we think Mary is very meek, she's a very submissive wife, she listens to her husband, all of that, and all of a sudden there's a switch at the end and we see a different side of Mary. So I really, really like this.
Yeah, yeah. Mriti is a young writer who's immensely talented, and I had the chance to meet her at the Jaipur Literary Festival. She has written a book titled The Death of Kirti Kadakia,
yes,
where her detective figure features a young writer of detective fiction who solves cases in an apartment complex in Mumbai in the Gujarati community. So that's the community she belongs to. And the affluent side of that community has an underbelly to it, a dark side, let's say, which she is very effectively able to explore in her work. And in this story, in particular, as I remember her mentioning, in Jaipur, she is focused on those figures who are usually invisible to us. Like, for example, as you say, the nurse, she's a caretaker. So the caretaker figures in our world, in our society, are often invisible to us. We take them for granted. But she has used that figure to focalize the narrative. So she is the narrator, or at least it's from her point of view that the story is narrated. And she, in effect, becomes the figure who's making the deduction. So, in effect, stands in for the formal process of detection. And even if there's no formal inspector or director, because the crime is yet to occur. And no spoilers, of course, I won't give away the ending. But the mystery is precisely that. It's in exploring this vulnerability of those in the last phase of their life who are so dependent then on helpers and figures whom we otherwise might not even notice in our spaces. And allowing for those figures who actually have a very compassionate side to them in many cases to become humanized. And so a different kind of already perspective on the form as well as on the kind of social relations which exist in a given social setup like that, like the Gujarati, say, higher class society of Mumbai.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, one thing I've noticed is that recently there have been a lot of, you know, mystery stories or detective stories coming around, especially based in Mumbai, whether they are sort of slightly historical or recent, which I personally am just excited about as someone who lives in Mumbai. But also, I wanted to mention my favorite story from the anthology as well. So my favorite is Madhulika Little's A Convenient Corpse. So the reason is purely because, like you said, it's that very classic, you know, Arthur Conan Doyle kind of story setup, except obviously it's set in like 1600s Delhi. So I love the, you know, amateur sleuth, which is Muzaffar Jung, and who is solving this crime of an unidentifiable corpse that has been found. And I personally am a huge fan of just amateur detective stories compared to, you know, like having a credible, I don't know, police force solving something. And this story, I felt like, has all of those, you know, typical sort of elements that I love in sort of detective stories. So you have the sidekick, which is Mirza Sahib, you know, like your Watson or your Hamish. Then you have the resourceful wife, Shireen, which I love because there's also like that strong female figure present in this historical setting. And then obviously you have the police officer or chowkidar, in this case, Bashir, who is, you know, not agreeing to what this amateur sleuth is saying and is kind of reluctant and is clearly not smart enough, but then eventually is around to help him solve the case. So I just love that whole setup. And also what I really enjoyed was, you know, obviously all the cultural descriptions, all the details, like what they wear, what the houses look like, you know, this very almost sort of putting you back there in the past, and the, you know, all the language, like all the Urdu words that are sprinkled in, which I think makes it just very enjoyable to read. So for me, the story was not even so much about, oh, what is the mystery or who did it and, you know, solving the mystery, but it's just that enjoyment of reading something where with every sentence, you're kind of just enjoying the experience of reading so much. So that was my favorite story. Do you have a favorite story from this collection, and what would it be?
That's a good question. I shouldn't actually say so, even if I do, because I'll
Can't
offend
play
the
favorites.
rest of the authors. Yeah, I should play a favorites as an editor. But just before I get there, just a few comments. So, firstly, on the question of Bombay as being a very fertile ground for the genre, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, besides the authors we have included here, Sujata Massey has pioneered the Bombay style whodunit in her series of novels, the Malabar Hills series, which of course feature a woman who's a lawyer who becomes a sleuth and solves various mysteries. Then, of course, most recently we have had Anuradha Kumar reaching back in time, but not so far back as in the case of Madhulika Little, but to the time of Mark Twain's visit to Bombay. She has a different kind of story in this particular volume. Then, well, we were just talking about Meethi's story, but Vikram Chandra's, of course, Kama is also set in Bombay, as is Tanuj Solanki's experimental story, in which the city almost becomes a character. So I think this is a common factor in many, especially noir-style narratives, which depict the ambivalences within the human psyche, the city's impact on our human psychology and on the human condition, for that matter, the way in which the various cross-currents and pressures which people face trying to make a living in the tough worlds of modern metropolitan context are very much captured well. And then when it comes to the second part of your question, the kind of well, stories which perhaps I like personally, well, let me just broadly sketch out what I was looking for, the intention which I had in mind. So my idea was that it might be possible for an editor like myself to not only act as a compiler, as someone who is assembling the best of what exists. That is one of the tasks, but it shouldn't be the only task. It should also be possible for me to give a direction maybe to the kind of writing that is happening. So in other words, I was not just looking for prior published materials. There are some reprints, there are some stories which are already in the public domain, like say the classic stories by Ray and by Saradindu and a few others, including Vikram Chandra's Kama. But as an editor, my focus really is mainly on originality. I'm looking for original work. And what kind of original work? Again, not just treading the beaten track, not just replicating what we already know from, say, the Golden Age, the classic whodunits patterns, but deflecting those patterns, even subverting those patterns. So I'm really interested in formal innovation, and I'm also interested in seeing to what extent can the form be used as a vehicle for social critique. So these were the two elements I emphasized in my concept note, which I sent out to these various authors. At least 25, I think, of these stories are new and original stories. And the idea was to ask them to write offbeat detective fiction. Now, not all of them necessarily followed that track. Some of them prefer to go with this, say, more conventional approach. And that too requires a lot of work, because you have to put the clues in place. It has to work out as a satisfactory narrative. But I was very pleasantly surprised by the few which really questioned the very tenets of the genre. So, you know, in the classic context, the emphasis is on who done it. So you have to find out the identity of the killer, if it's a murder, say, mystery. But in the case of more contemporary writing, that has shifted a little to why, the why question, why done it. In other words, the psychological basis for crime. And that allows for this social critique to emerge and become foregrounded. So the why question becomes central, rather than just the identity of the killer, but you know, what is the logic which underlay it, the sociological even logic which underlies the patterns of criminal and deviant behavior and delinquency which are to be found in society. So some of the interesting stories in our collection take us in that direction, but there's one which actually pushes it altogether novel direction, and that's Anil Menon's story, where he brings in, instead of just who done it or why done it, who to do in. So it becomes like a question, Is it possibly the case that there's an investment made by the reader who, you know, sort of reads this kind of fiction, which a writer might actually confront and mirror in a very grotesque way? So again, I shouldn't reveal too much of the story because the fun is in reading it, but it's a story which completely inverts the usual paradigm of detective fiction, which gives you that satisfactory sense of closure, a resolution, a neat closing of the storyline and the tying up of the threads. Instead, it leaves it in a much more indeterminate and open-ended space. So yeah, I would say it's amazing to see such work done in our spaces by writers like Anil Menon, and for that matter, Tanuj Solanki too, who also deconstructs the form to good effect by telling a story about a writer of detective fiction who becomes the victim.
So yeah, I think I'm really interested in the why done it stories as well, because I've seen quite a few you know, come out recently. And the fact that you mentioned that stories which sort of have this social implication is something that I've always been drawn to. So one story came to mind, which was The Lottery by Shirley Jackson, which is, again, which is about a crime. And towards the end of the story, you realize why they do it. And it's sort of that why is the most shocking thing ever. So I'm not going to reveal, but I'm just going to put this recommendation out there for people who are interested in crime, especially to do with society and social implications.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, no, absolutely. Social critique can be done in a variety of ways. I mean, and think back to the time of social realism, where the idea was that essentially literature should provide a kind of moral commentary and social commentary. And Premchand and others, of course, also did write stories which featured crimes. So that in itself is a long-standing tradition. But I think what crime fiction, in the genreic sense, and detective fiction do, they do it in a highly structured manner. So the puzzle is as crucial, or the solving of the puzzle, it becomes the investigation is as crucial as the, as it were, exploration of the social basis for the crime. So as Francesca Orsini, who's one of the finest historians of the genre, tells us, the form actually includes a certain technique, which is the withholding and structured dissemination of information. So that's the mystery, right? You don't know. In especially the whodunits of the classic era, you don't know who's the criminal. Eventually, it's disclosed. And that is as a result of the deduction. And so the actual story is that of the investigation, which is uncovering the prior story in a retroactive way. The prior story is that action which happened before the story commences. The story commences with the disclosure of a crime that has happened, either a murder or some other form of criminal behavior or activity. And then there is the investigation, which subsequently reconstructs story A, and that is story B. And story B is actually the crucial element, but the two are in a way deeply, obviously, intertwined. So that's the fascinating aspect of this particular genre. And in the process, yes, there can be a kind of turning of the form to new ends. As we've seen in recent times, especially, marginal communities have espoused crime fiction and detective fiction, because I think their contention is that society at large is marked by so many inequities and fault lines, and the crimes are not just of individuals. These are social problems and contradictions which need to be confronted, and narratives which tell the story from the point of view of the underprivileged or the outcast. I think those are the fascinating stories which can actually allow for that. I think we see that in the exploration, for example, in this collection of a story featuring a Dalit figure by Geethi Chandra, who's mainly a writer of fantasy, but who has recently experimented with science fiction and now crime fiction. And she sets the story in an eminent institution, which we can all recognize, one of Delhi's top colleges, in which then, yes, a crime occurs. And I won't again sort of reveal the ending, but it's a story which has a strong sociological and feminist, underpinning.
And I'm so glad that you mentioned this, sir, because actually one of our questions was going to be, you know, what new sort of developments are you seeing in detective fiction right now? And what do you expect to see in the near future? Like you mentioned, more marginalized communities using it to, you know, have, let's say, more representation of marginalized communities and using detective fiction to kind of tell their stories. But other than that, do you see any trends or any developments that you're anticipating in, let's say, the next 5 years?
It's a good question. Yeah, difficult always to foresee or prophesize what may come. But what I could observe based on my research and, of course, this experience of editing the volume is the increasing prominence of women writers, foregrounding of gender questions, even by writers who are not women. So gender seems to be a key question. Of course, it's not that gender was never focused on in early writings. It was a concern, but perhaps the genre has been marked by a certain masculinist impetus, right, from the time of, say, figures like Dupin, Poe's Dupin, and Sherlock Holmes, of course, by Conan Doyle. There was perhaps more of an emphasis on the rationalist, logical deduction performed by the male detective. Subsequently, Agatha Christie turned that around a little bit by bringing in a more feminized figure like Poirot, and then Miss Marple, of course. And of course, since then, figures like Sarah Paretsky in America and others have completely reworked the hard-boiled, for example, format, which again had a strong emphasis on almost sometimes even misogynist detective figure, as we sometimes find in Chandler and even some of the other writers. But yeah, as a result, there's been a kind of bringing in of feminist perspective. And I think the fact that in this volume too, we have such a large number of women writers, whether it's Nev March, whether it's Meethi, whether it's Geethi Chandra, or for that matter, Madhulika Liddle. You mentioned the figure Shireen. So Shireen is as much of a collaborator in the investigation as is Muzaffar Jung. So I like the idea of that collaborative dimension being brought in this historical mystery. In the case of Wasim Khan, again, his series of Malabar mysteries features a Parsi detective. She's the first woman to be appointed in the police force. Persis is her name, and she solves mysteries despite the fact that her colleagues often have very sexist attitudes towards her and do not cooperate as she hopes. So he based her on one of the first women to become police ACP, Shanti Parwani, who was one of the first women to be appointed in the police force. Because in 50s India, there were no women in the police force for the most part. They were just treated as figures who could come and help with interrogations of female suspects. But then gradually, as recruitment patterns change, now we have more of a level playing field. And of course, many series on TV depicting strong women in important roles in the police force, but it's still a rarity, or perhaps at least it's an uphill task for them to be able to swing their weight in what is often a very asymmetrical situation of power.
Yeah, no, that's a great observation, because I also think that the centering of the woman as the detective or the one solving the crime rather than always being the victim of the crime, which I think is, you know, more of what we see also in a lot of like the thriller genre, or what we have seen happen quite substantially like over many, many years. I think that also makes it very interesting. I also am very curious about the process of putting this anthology together. So, you know, you mentioned that you had mentioned all of these things in the concept itself, saying that you wanted something that, you know, subverted in some way the detective fiction genre. So can you tell us a little bit about your experience of, you know, getting these stories in, how you chose certain stories, what were your parameters? And I'm also curious about the design process, because I found the book and, you know, the book cover, all the design elements within the book, this very, you know, clearly high production value, you know, a lot of like effort and care has been put into the book, which obviously our listeners can't see right now, but if you can go and look at what the book looks like, definitely go do that. So can you tell us a little bit about, you know, what that entire process was for you?
Sure, sure.
And if I can just add here, so that we read that since Hachette put out a call for submissions, the response that they got was so overwhelming, and which is why the reason is we have two volumes in the first place. Yeah.
Exactly, exactly. No, yeah, true enough. See, I don't work for Hachette. I'm an independent researcher and editor. But we've established a good working relationship. And when I approached the publisher, that is Thomas Abraham, it was an opportune moment because he had just been able to put together a backlist, which in fact was then a reissue of Yellowback, thrillers, detective novels, and well, basically forms of popular fiction, which were extremely popular in the 1930s and 40s. In fact, you can trace some of the sort of Yellowbacks even further back into the 19th century. So 170 odd titles were initially released, re-released, that is to say, with Indian, obviously, sort of cover the covers, and the Yellowback aspect was preserved. But essentially, this is an effective reissue. So for him, this was just what he was looking for when I put in my book proposal, because it would be a way of Indianizing detective fiction or bringing in an Indian perspective. So we started basically discussing the way in which it would be done. And the basic idea was to send out invitations to established figures. So initially, we worked on the premise that published authors would be approached first. So those who had already published books with detective figures who are central to the sort of narrative were sent out these letters. We were able to get their contact. Thomas was extremely helpful. And of course, being in the trade, knows a lot about the field. And I was reading up widely, as extensively as I could. And so that research proved very useful at the end of the day. And many of the writers we responded to did agree. Some did not. Some felt that, you know, they didn't feel they're comfortable with the short form. They prefer to write longer narratives. So as a result, you know, for example, the idea is was put forward that, you know, you need space to plot a detective story. So you can't do it effectively in the short form. But hey, it was done by Conan Doyle. And after all, the majority of the Sherlock Holmes stories are short stories, although he has a few novels as well. And it's still a popular mode, the short story form. So yeah, so we didn't want to bring in excerpts. We wanted short fiction and original short fiction for the most part. So some sample stories from the classic era, some stories which give an illustration of the richness of the archive. So a combination of that kind of archival view and historical sense of the evolving aspects of the genre. But then the more important aspect was the sort of summoning, as it were, into being of entirely new creations. And that it was a great sort of pleasant surprise to overshoot what was initially the you know, originary premise of just having one volume and spill over not into a second volume, but actually have two volumes of which are, come to about 800 pages, which I guess is a fairly yeah, a sort of extensive range of which represents the canvas effectively, the present day spectrum, if you like, of voices, and showcases it very effectively. Yeah.
No, definitely. And I think so. That's exactly what I want to add, was the fact that it is short fiction is what drew me to it. Right. So let's say now, if it was in an excerpt form, because see, I feel short fiction itself leaves you with so many questions, right? Because of the genre, you keep wondering, you know, like what happened, all of that. But imagine if you had excerpts, you would just be left with so many more questions.
Yeah, especially with detective fiction, extracts, excerpts, it just don't work because, well, you'd be wondering at the end of the day, you know, in which direction the story would
exactly. Going.
Yeah. With science fiction, one could do that. Extracts were possible, but not here. Yeah.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. I also wanted to know, is there any author that, you know, when you were reaching out to authors where you felt like I absolutely need to have this author in or multiple
that one author, yeah.
Anthology or this anthology would not be complete without these authors?
Well, of course, Vikram Chandra and Sacred Games, sort of, they speak, his work speaks for itself. And it was really fortuitous that I was able to get in touch with him. And he could not come up with a new story featuring Sartaj Singh, his detective figure from that series and the novel. But yes, he did remind me that Karma was where, that story Karma was where Sardar Singh first appeared. And it's such a powerful story. It does capture the 90s moment so powerfully, the growing fundamentalist tendencies in society, and just, yeah, the situation of a detective from a minority community, the Sikh community, as he faces up to these almost like, you know, sinister communal forces, which were then on the rise. So it's a portrait of the city based also on his extensive research. He does, you know, actual ground level research in the sort of streets and bylanes of Mumbai, and sometimes goes along and meets people from the underworld. That's what gives the strength to his longer narratives like Sacred Game. Yeah, so he knows the lingo, he knows the inner workings. And of course, is from a family where they really know storytelling sort of very well, with Tanuja and others as part of this sort of family space. So yeah, absolutely. He's probably one of the figures I felt we must have. Besides, of course, Ray and the unexpected surprises, well, they came along as the sort of journey unfolded, where one asked people who had contributed, say, to the science fiction volumes, if they would be interested in contributing to a story here. And some of them came through very nicely. So, or asking a psychoanalyst who has, a psychiatrist, I should say, who has written short fiction to try his hand at detective fiction. So that was an experiment which clicked. So you could see certain parallels between psychiatry and the kind of process of deducing the, you know, nature of a patient's ailments at the level of mental illness and the process of detection. So that was just serendipity, or it was a complete stroke of luck.
No, I'm really glad that it all came together, sir, because the final product of what we have is nothing more than a treat. It's just, it's lovely, especially for Aishwarya and I, who love mysteries, who love detective stories. We were always, you know, we were usually like, you know, when we have, you know, during our lunch times, during, you know, like recreational moments, we discuss a lot of these, you know, Western stories. And we always say that, oh, why don't we have Indian ones? And now we have our answers. There's so much fodder in both the volumes that, you know, we can sort of discuss it over so many more means to come.
Okay. Yeah, that's true. I forgot to yes, answer the question about design. So actually, that was not within my brief. Of course, that was a kind of production level question at the level of the publishing firm. And once the stories had come in, once we had completed the process of editing, then the question is then how to present these. So what I really liked was then the idea of presenting these two books as a collector's item. You know, it could have, these could have been presented in a kind of more inexpensive fashion as paperbacks, right? But they presented it as a box set, right? With the very special design elements, which are actually quite unique, I think. I don't remember seeing anything like that in at least the field of popular fiction, where so much attention is not paid to the design aspect. And Mia Jose, the designer, really did a good job with the interlinked kind of cover design, intertwined cover design. The two covers kind of link up with one another. And yeah, so all the elements came together very nicely, and it really does seem like a wonderful gift to give somebody a collector's item in that sense.
Yes, definitely. I think a great gift, a great collector's item, and I think a really good almost study material for anyone who is writing, you know, detective
research
fiction, anyone who wants to write. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Research, for researchers, for writers, and for just like people who enjoy mysteries a little too much.
Like, absolutely. I should also acknowledge the contribution made by one of my former students, who's now doing research on the form, Vaibhav Parel, who's been so generous with his sort of materials, his study materials, and enabled me to get back to the history and the contemporary debates as regards the form, which is being taken very seriously, by the way, especially in institutional context abroad. I think that's also beginning to happen in India. In Delhi University, for example, they've included Madhulika Little and Ibn Safi in the BA English course, which was not the case earlier, as I was saying. I was complaining about that earlier, but now there's been a bit of a change. And in the West, yeah, they see detective fiction as a very important branch of world literature. So crime fiction is, and detective fiction is being taken seriously, studied very carefully by scholars at the top level, and it's also being taught. Yeah. So apart from the fact that it's a cultural phenomenon, you know, you have Crime Writers Festival. We had a few of those in India. Oxford Bookstore had organized for 3 years. There was a Crime Writers Festival helmed by Namita Gokhale, amongst others. And that was quite well responded to. You had writers from the regional context like Surendra Pathak, as well as some of the writers who work in English, come and sort of do readings. And there were sort of discussion sessions, scholars and critics also joined.
Yeah, we also spoke to Hussain Zaidin. I think he had mentioned that it was at one of these crime festivals that he had spoken to.
Hussain Zaidi is the one who helped Vikram Chandra during his research for Sacred Games, helped him because he works on true crime, so he knows the real guys who are at the back of some of the incidents which have happened, and introduced Vikram Chandra to some of them. They had a chance to go down the memory lane of those respective figures, some of them the crime lords, Bombay. So he was there.
This brings us to the second last round, so it's called the fun quiz. Okay, where I give you a few options and you have to pick one. Okay, and no thinking allowed.
Okay.
One weapon that has been overdone in stories, or one weapon that you are really sort of fond of or you would pick in a story if you were the main lead. A, poison. B, knife. C, gun.
Poison. Poison, I think, has been probably overused as a trope in much detective fiction. It can become a metaphor, but sometimes it can also be overused and become cliched as an instrument of, in the hands of a killer.
Okay, all right. If you woke up one day and found yourself in a mystery novel, would you be A, the tormented detective, B, the serial killer, C, the sidekick of the detective, or D, the victim?
Interesting question. Yeah, thanks. I think I would be the tormented detective. Yeah, the angst-ridden detective would be my preference there.
Okay, the last one. If you had to pick one location to solve a mystery, which place would it be? A, London. B, US. C, India.
India, definitely. After all, we are based here and the interview is happening in these spaces. And I think these spaces deserve more recognition and prominence, not just the big cities, but also even the hinterland spaces, which are gradually beginning to be represented. We have, for example, Ankush Sekia, who, as you know, has written so many wonderful Delhi-based novels, but is now tracking back to the land of his roots, the Northeast, and has set the particular story, which is included here, in a Northeast sort of setting. So setting is so crucial to the, as it were, meaning of so many of the stories, and the Indianization of the stories, if you like, because it gives the particular flavor, the context in which then the action unfolds, in which then the mystery can be solved. And that recognition factor, someone did ask the question, would this be explicable to Western readers? But I think today in the age of Google and with so much of travel happening, I think that goes without saying that ultimately it's not just a matter of representing a space as exotic, but as it's important that it should be familiar to us, even if it's somewhat unfamiliar to readers from outside our spaces, who will then gradually acquire a certain kind of familiarity with it.
Absolutely. And, you know, if we can, for so many years, especially in our childhoods, if we can read so many American, you know, authors and British authors and be able to enjoy those books, you know, even if there are a lot of elements that we can't relate to, if we can still find enjoyment from those books, then why can't it be the other way around, where they you know, might not understand certain elements, but can still enjoy sort of the literature or the fiction that is coming out of India. Okay, so the last segment that we now have before we end this interview is the rapid fire section. So here I'm just going to be asking you quick questions, and all you have to give is one word answers. Just say the first thing that comes to your mind. Okay. So my first question is, one detective you would like to play sidekick to?
I guess it would be Hercule Poirot. Good old Hercule Poirot.
Nice. Yeah, yeah. I would also choose him, so I understand. Okay. One underrated detective fiction book that you think that Indian readers should read?
Philip Kerr, Philosophical Investigations. He's a writer from England, but he situates his work in Nazi Germany. So he's uncovering, again, as a writer of historical mysteries, the history of Nazism through the form of detective fiction. So Philosophical Investigation is absolutely brilliant, besides his Bernie Gunther series, which actually is situated in the Nazi context.
Okay, interesting. Would you ever write a story? Speculative fiction, detective fiction, whichever genre it might be.
I have written a story titled A Visit to Partition World, which can be accessed online. That's science fiction, yeah.
Okay.
Speculative fiction. But then, I haven't yet tried my hand at detective fiction.
Will, are you going to try your hand at detective fiction?
Let's see if, if the sort of challenge seems interesting enough, maybe.
Okay. But we'll definitely add the link to the story that you have written, which you said is available online in the podcast episode description, so the listeners can go check it out. I have another question, which is, so at this point, you know, you've done speculative fiction, you've written about partition literature, detective fiction. Is there a next genre you have in mind that you want to explore?
Yes, but that must remain a mystery because it's still at the planning stage.
Oh,
I can't give away the game.
Is that
the
your
game
next
is
project?
The game is a, to quote Sherlock Holmes, the game is afoot.
I'm gonna take a wild guess here, or maybe this is more of a hope. Like, I hope it's horror, because I think the Indian horror. Oh, it's not. Okay.
No, but there may be elements of horror included. Yeah.
I was also going to say horror. Is it fantasy then?
No. But all will be revealed eventually.
Okay.
I can't say more because it's in process.
Okay. Sure.
some things must remain a mystery till the time is right.
No, we'll wait for it for sure. Okay. And I'm sure, and we're pretty sure after seeing this collection and you know your body of work, we do know that I'm sure the collection is going to be even more exciting and interesting. So, you know, it was a lot of fun speaking to you. So, I mean, Eshwar and I had a lot of fun discussing both the volumes, right? So, you know, just going back and forth between, you know, different characters, tropes, and then now understanding sort of your process on how you curated it. It was a lot of fun. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
And
thanks.
I hope you had fun. Yes. You enjoyed this conversation as much as we did.
Sure. We had a good session, I think, on the whole. Thank you very much. Yeah.
Hope you enjoyed this episode of Books and Beyond with Bound.
This podcast is created by Bound, a company that helps you grow through story. Find us at Bound India on all social media platforms.
Tune in every Wednesday as we peek into the lives and minds of some brilliant authors from India and South Asia.